Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hi, everyone. Welcome to an in-betweenisode where I answer any question that you have for me. Today's question comes from listener Elias. He asks, what were punishments in medieval England? All right, this is a fun topic. Well, Elias, punishments were really bad in the Middle Ages compared to today, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. When I was in college, or at university, as you lovely listeners say outside of America, I was traveling through Europe with friends, and we saw a lot of wonderful sights, mostly cathedrals, because that's what you see in European cities, and we were bored of seeing the same thing over and over again. I didn't have enough architectural knowledge to appreciate a medieval cathedral. We were in a small German town, I can't remember which one, and we saw an exhibition for the Medieval Torture Museum. And we go inside and we see things that absolutely blow my mind for their cruelty. One of them was called the Judas Cradle. It's a chair, but the top is a very sharp pyramid where the victim is stripped, bound with ropes, and suspended over the device, and then they're lowered onto it, and the point slowly enters whatever orifice they have, depending on their male or female. There was another thing called the iron chair, where the victim's wrists are tied to the chair. Two bars are pushed the arms against armrests for the spikes to penetrate the flesh even further. Now, here's the problem. I found out that almost all these things that you see in medieval torture museums, and there's a number of medieval torture museums, and sometimes they're traveling exhibitions, almost all of these things you see at the museums are completely fabricated or were made by someone in the 1700s and 1800s and passed off as a medieval torture device. So there's a lot of ideas about what people did, but a lot of these things are also false. So this is a hard subject to have to be able to separate from truth and falsehood. So there's drawings and depictions of unique and weird torture devices, of people being boiled alive, people being put in the Iron Maiden or put on racks or whatever. But few of these devices were actually used, and when they were used, it was very rare. These were used for people who committed very high-level crimes, who were traitors who sold state intelligence, or raiders or bandits, you know, people that could be caught, and it was very rare to inflict these sort of cruel punishments upon people. The reason they were rare is because many of these people were good at getting away if they were raiders or bandits. Because there was no standing army in the Middle Ages that was funded by the state, there was no central police force to stop these people. So their charges against the law skyrocketed and made them horrible men. But when an average person was charged with the death penalty, they were usually simply just hanged. They weren't tortured. That's because getting hanged is cheap, effective, and fast. And in the Middle Ages, people didn't have that many resources. So here's the big idea with medieval punishment. A medieval punishment has to be economical. It has to inflict that the legal structure can inflict it on whoever is guilty of the crime it is prescribed for. And it has to be a deterrent greater than the act being deterred. And it also has to be appropriate to the culture in which it exists. You have a lot of public shaming for medieval punishment because, you can't really move around to a different village. You have to stay in your village for the most part. So if you're shamed, that's a terrible punishment. But in modern America or Europe, if you shame someone, they simply move to a new community and that's all it takes. Now, medieval societies rarely used prisons. That's because they didn't have much food, periods of famine and hunger were common, and they occurred frequently until about the 16th or 17th century when the potato comes, and that's a topic of another episode. And if food is scarce, then prisons are a waste of the labor of the prisoners and a waste of the labor of the guards. You're feeding people to sit around and do nothing, which is fine in a wealthy society in the 21st century, but not today. Prisoners are a place where you only keep someone if you expect to be able to trade them for something worthwhile, you know, or you throw them in a debtor's prison in the hopes that their family or friends will pony up the money and bail them out. So a prison is economical in that sense. So punishments are more about making the offender physically or socially uncomfortable than about confining or restraining them. And also, I should mention that the whole idea of food scarcity, it makes sense that you would hang someone in that sense for stealing a loaf of bread. The person who stole the loaf of bread was so close to starvation that it was a choice between starvation and being hanged. The loss of the loaf of bread to the person who has it might also push them to the point of starvation. So that type of punishment seems disproportionate for today, but it might have been actually proportionate in medieval times. Now, most people were punished at manorial courts in a large manor or estate. All crimes apart from serious crimes were dealt by the manorial court. So when we talk about being boiled alive or burned or these other things, that didn't happen at the manorial court. When you lived on a huge estate, it was basically a little country unto itself. The lord of the manor could do just about anything he wanted to the serfs, and it wouldn't reach the king unless he was grossly unjust. So imagine a really rich person's huge estate that's 1,000 acres large, and he has people who work for him. And the Lord is the judge, jury, and executioner, and he determines what punishments are meted out. A manorial court was held multiple times during the year, and it was mandatory for all the villagers to attend or else they had to pay a fine. All men were divided into the groups of 10, known as the tithing. And each tithing was given the responsibility to make sure that no member of the group committed a crime. And if one did, then the other members had to make sure to bring him to the court. So there was sort of kind of an informal justice system where people would rat on each other. The person in charge of the court was the Lord Steward, and there was a jury that consisted of 12 men chosen by the villagers. So I guess the Lord wasn't judge, jury, and executioner, but giving you the idea more that he held significant power. And it was the jury's responsibility to collect evidence in order to decide whether the accused was guilty or not. And if accused was found guilty, the jury had to decide and then decide the punishment as well. So maybe you had your wages garnished. Usually you would pay a fine for prostitution. If you're a woman, you'd probably have your head shaven. That goes back to the Bible. You might have a mark put on you to show that you committed a crime, you know, a marked man. In extreme cases, you might have a hand chopped off. So the tool of your trade as a mason, your hand was your tool of your trade. And in a more serious case, you could be hung. Now, a very serious crime, you would go to the king's court. This had to deal with assault, murder, and treason. And these were considered crimes against the king, so you would go to the king's court wherever that would be, a multi-day journey. The king's court met several times a year where the king would hold court and had a prominent role in the medieval crime and punishment system. Here, the accused had to face the trial by ordeal, where the innocence or guilt was judged by subjecting them to unpleasant ordeals. These could be ordeal by fire, ordeal by water, and ordeal by combat. Now, again, these are very rare. It's not as if every single crime from taking the Lord's name in vain is handled by going to the king's court. The vast majority are handled by the manor system because the king only has so much time and he can only hear so many cases. So this is, you know, the Supreme Court. In the United States, the vast majority of cases are held by lower courts. Only very few make it to the Supreme Court. So an ordeal by fire is where the accused had to walk a distance of around 9 feet, either by holding a red-hot iron or over a red-hot plowshare. After that, the wounds were bandaged, and they were asked to appear before the court after 3 days. After 3 days, the bandages were opened. In cases where healing of wounds had started, the accused were declared innocent, whereas in cases where there were no sign of improvement, the accused were pronounced guilty and were punished according to their crime. It was thought that God intervened in order to save the innocent, and with God's power, the healing of wounds started to take place. And ordeals were ways that justice was held out during the Crusades, when the Crusaders were arguing over policy, whether or not to invade this city or that city, sometimes a person would subject himself to an ordeal to prove that God had, you know, put his stamp on their vision or their claim. So you still see this in the Crusades, but ordeals start to die out in the 1200s, and that's part of the Magna Carta, that you have trial by jury instead of trial by ordeal. Another ordeal is by water. In the ordeal by water, there were two kinds of ordeals. One was an ordeal by cold water, where the other was an ordeal by hot water. In the ordeal by cold water, hands and feet of the accused were tied together and they were thrown in the water. They started floating and meant they were innocent, but if they sank, they were declared guilty. During an ordeal by hot water, the accused had to dip their hands in a kettle with boiling water and had to pick a stone from depth. After 3 days, the wounds were judged. In case of healing signs, they were considered innocent, and anything else meant they were guilty. The last was ordeal by combat. In cases of ordeal by combat, and this is something that the Normans bring to England after the conquest in 1066, the two parties in dispute had to fight. It was done when one party was accused by the other, but there were no witnesses or confessions. The winner of the fight was declared innocent. It was one of the most common methods employed by the judiciary during the Middle Ages. Now, before we think all smarmily, oh, those dumb medieval people, remember, ordeal by combat, think about two men using pistols to challenge each other to a duel. This goes well into the establishment of America. The president Andrew Jackson fought numerous duels over his lifetime. Into the 19th century, you have plenty of duels that are happening. I don't know as much about the European context, but if you consider that another form of ordeal by combat, it's almost the same thing. And arguments about the nature of justice is happening in a robust fashion in the Middle Ages. Thomas Aquinas, the greatest of church doctors of the High Middle Ages, argued that only a prince should have the right to sentence somebody to death. He didn't believe that the lord of a manor could do so. That to be a representative and an agent of the justice of God required someone in the monarchical line so that the divine right flows through you and you are expressing the divine right. So Thomas Aquinas, and the main doctor of the church, thought that capital punishment was something that should be used sparingly, not that many cases, and only by the person who was rightly qualified to do so. That's not too different from the justice system, or at least the theory of justice in the United States today that has capital punishment. I know those countries in the European Union do not, but the idea that it should be meted out only very carefully by a judge who can adjudicate whether the person who's receiving the punishment actually deserves it. Now, Thomas thought that that was a prince due to concepts of divine right, and the Lord was meting out a special measure of wisdom. But today, we, in a sense, think of a judge having similar qualifications because they have the legal training and can sift through the evidence properly to determine if they deserve that or not. So as you can see, there's a lot of negative false stereotypes about medieval justice. It was complicated, but in harsh times, it was the best system that worked. So Elias, thank you so much for the question. If any of you would like to submit one to me, you can do so by going to historyunplugpodcast.com. There you'll find instructions, and I look forward to answering anything you throw at me. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site historyonthenet.com, and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.